Blog Talk Radio.
Politics on the Navajo Nation. The voice of Navajo politics. Navajo politics. Navajo politics.
You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. This is Cal Nez. On December 11th, Wednesday, 9 o'clock. We've got several things on our plate this evening, so I'm glad that you're there with us. And I was posting on Facebook, and I listed that we had a couple of special guests that are going to be on air with us this evening. And also, we're going to be talking about the famous Washington Redskin issue that's been plaguing the nation, or the Native Americans, and just all these things. And I like to have everybody call in to 347-989-0048. Again, this is Cal Nez, and you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. So, the first, we have a guest that has called in, and I appreciate the opportunity that he is giving his time to us this evening. Let me set the stage here. Navajo business, the Navajo Nation, investors, and the politics, the red tape that people usually talk about on the Navajo Nation, Navajo business, Navajo preference, Navajo business regulatory, and even the dynamics of the Navajo business. So that's all these words are kind of put into one, so to speak, and I want to be able to address that. Now, I'm a businessman of 27 years, so been involved in this arena for quite a while, over a quarter of a decade or of a century. And so my interest has always been is the empowerment of Navajo entrepreneurs. I believe the Navajo people. I believe that they can develop, I believe they can understand and will understand business. And so we've got several projects that have come and gone in the 27 years that I have been in business, started by various different presidents, different entities, different economic division of economic development, and some are still ongoing. But consistently, across the board, majority of them have gone under. So I wanted to bring this gentleman on the air this evening to kind of pick his brain, who he is, what he does, and why that he would be interested in investing his time and his interests, and as well as money to the Navajo Nation. Now, on the flip side of this, I wanted to be able to remind everybody that a couple of shows back, we had the Forgotten People, as well as the Save the Confluence. Brought them on, we talked about what the dynamics of business are and is, and what their concerns are. Now, one of the central things that I brought into this issue has been this. As Navajo people, we look at our economy. We talk about, well, we need more business on the Navajo Nation consistently. I think everybody agrees with that. Now, as I'm talking and asking people from elected leaders to the grassroots level, what is it that we want to do? Now, we have two aspects of our culture. We have the traditional aspect, as well as we have the desire to grow our economy. And to grow an economy, unless I'm totally talking out in left field, economy typically involves business. And so I pose the question, where are we going to meet in the middle? Of course, we need to bring the traditional concerns, sacred sites and or different things in various parts of the Navajo Nation. It's just not just Western Navajo. There's areas in Eastern Navajo, Southern, Central, all over the Navajo Nation. There's different areas and people have various different concerns. So I've got this gentleman who is hanging on the on the other line, who I have who I'm very much interested to see as an outside person. I don't mean that in a negative fashion. I mean, he's why that he's bringing his resources to the Navajo Nation. And so I would like to introduce him. He is a businessman. Well, actually, I'll have him introduce himself. So welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Phil. You know, my name's Lamar Whitmer, and I'm the managing partner of Confluence Partners, which is a group of individuals that bring a real diversity of talents and expertise to construct a tourism destination on the Western Navajo Nation. You know, my background is I grew up in a construction family. I spent several years on Wall Street financing projects. I guess my biggest claim to fame was the Bank One Ballpark. It was a product of my legislative endeavors. I was the chief negotiator for the community on the first expansion effort, and I represented various clients over the years, you know, ranging from governments to foreign sovereign families. And, you know, we're very happy to have the opportunity to do something positive out on the western side to help the Navajo people develop an economy. We feel that Grand Canyon Escalade will produce a estimated 2,000 jobs on site and 1,500 jobs off-site. And it's been my pleasure to learn more about the Navajo people. You know, the genesis of this came in 1997 when Albert Hale put together an ad hoc committee, which I was privileged to be a part of. And we looked at everything on the Navajo Nation in terms of economic development. And I was fortunate enough to look at the tourism aspects, and tourism has been studied for many, many years, going back to the 30s to the, and then more recently in the 60s when the dam controversy on the Colorado came about. And the promises of the tourism economy have always been out there, but they've never been realized. And we firmly believe that you know, Grand Canyon Escalade will be a hub to other developments on the Navajo Nation and be a springboard for entrepreneurs to do all sorts of things. So, answer, give you a little bit of an intro.
I'm listening. Yeah, keep going.
Well, the, you know, I'll tell you about the development. It centers around the ability to get on a eight-person gondola tram and go from the top to the bottom of the canyon. And somebody that has spent an enormous amount of time in the canyon, the view on top is breathtaking, and the view from the bottom up is inspiring. And the one thing about Navajo culture that I appreciate is the striving for beauty and harmony. And I think that's what the Navajo people will be able to share with the entire world, their culture. And I think the development will give them that opportunity. The basic structure is that the Navajo Nation would be putting in $60 million for the off-site infrastructure, and we will be raising $120 to $150 million for the core development features. Hotels will come along. We've already had some indications of interest from various hoteliers to develop at the site. And be happy to answer anything else you'd like to pose.
Yeah, well, okay, well, so you are involved in the Escalade, and I wasn't exactly certain because I know in business, you know, that there are some privilege information that are still ongoing that I don't know what aspect that I need, that I could indulge in, but, you know, I'll let you say what you can answer and what you can't answer, but I think, so as is, I mean, since you brought up the Escalade, you, what was, you know, what was the thing that you, as an investor, you know, yeah, tourism is there, there's a lot of resources that the Navajo Nation has to offer, but what is it that's in your heart, in your mind, that attracts you to the Navajo people? Of course, there's many, many different areas that you can go.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I, one of my first jobs as a teenager was the construction of the Red Mesa High School, my first real introduction to Navajos. And, you know, as a people, I think they're extremely talented. And the thing I like about them is their way they accept other people. They have a very self-deprecating sense of humor. I can't say that I've ever felt more loved in any spot on the world more than the Navajo Nation, and I think they have a lot to offer the world. I had the opportunity to meet a Navajo practitioner at one of our open houses, and he explained to me the traditional view of the universe as being two baskets, a male-female basket. And before I could get the words out of my mouth to say, like physicists say, a Mobus, he already said Mobus. And I think the Navajo people have a very special story to tell, many stories to tell. And I think in a world that is hungry for beauty and harmony and balance, I think it's a opportunity for the Navajo people to share their culture with dignity with the rest of the world and develop an economy.
Okay. So with that in mind, you came to the Navajo Nation. Now, what has been your experience in terms of getting yourself involved, and where did you first go to get yourself engaged?
Well, because of my relationship with former President Hale, I spoke with him, and we started talking to different folks in the government and the local area. And we started to, you know, look at how we could put this together, developing on trust land is a very complicated endeavor, and then you layer on top of that the environmental and cultural regulations, and it gets very time consuming and very complex, and we haven't even started that process yet. We're just at the getting the documents to allow us to begin that. And And so, you know, we started with Vice President Shelley, who became President Shelley, and we entered into an MOU, and those negotiations are ongoing, and we hope to have them wrapped up fairly soon. When it comes down to actually constructing the project, it'll take, we estimate, 18 months. The environmental and the cultural permitting, we estimate, would be another 18 months. And so we'd be looking at 3 years from when the agreements are executed to opening day.
Okay. If I may, one of the things that I wanted to kind of bring up is that, yes, there's been both sides. And so now that you have initiated this project with former President Albert Hale, and now the current President Ben Shelley, now working through the process, I mean, it's been, I guess, from reading through the news articles, it hasn't been a very easy process. You have got there are several different layers that, as investors or as business people, that you have to go through. You've got the Navajo Nation government. You have got the central government. Then you've got the local chapters, and those are the things that you have to go through. Now, what has been your experience in terms of going through those hoops?
Well, it's been a two-edged sword. I mean, the people you meet are very, you know, I find them to be very professional and very well-meaning, and you know the process you have to go through to make sure that you have everything is very time-consuming, more time-consuming than in non-Indian country projects. But you know, there's also the social aspect of this of the need, and I can tell you that all of my partners feel that you know, we have a duty or calling to do something. That you know, when you're sitting there with your grandkids and they ask you, "Granddad, what did you do for a living?" It's, you know, do you really want to tell them that you upzoned a corner so the Walgreens could go in, or that you did something that put people to work and created an economy? And, you know, without getting too philosophical, you know, in how I was raised, you know, my family in our church believed that when you're in the service of your fellow man, you're in the service of your God. And it's something that I can tell you all my partners take very, very seriously.
I see. So, as you're doing this thing, you know, as I was beginning to say that, you know, there are opposition groups that are concerned about the local sacred sites. Now, one of the biggest ones that I've heard is that people are saying that this group came in, they bypassed all the local concerns, and they're working directly with central government, and they've actually had meetings over in Flagstaff behind closed doors. And so a lot of groups are they're feeling like they're being left out. Now, I will chime in on my thoughts on this, but I want to get your take on that.
Well, you know, I really don't want to focus too much on the negatives. I mean, you know, we've obviously made a few missteps, you know, and we would love to have everybody on board. but there's also the sense of urgency that something be done as soon as possible. You know, we actually had met with many members of the our opposition prior to them being our opposition to try to involve them in the project. You know, we approached the local chapter as soon as we thought it was appropriate to do so, because of the massive investment that the nation needs to make for the off-site infrastructures. It was imperative that we sequence them up front. And it's, you know, the $60 million is not chicken feed. And because it's off-site infrastructure, there's other use for that infrastructure. I know the local community would like to have a housing development, a new housing development out in the area. And we certainly support that. My late father was so fond of saying that love makes the world go round, but money greases the axle. And to a certain degree, that's the same here. And, Windrock has the purse. And so we need to bring everybody on board, and it's just the doing it at the appropriate time. And we certainly don't want to make anybody feel like they've been left out. And last summer we had multiple...
So as I'm hearing you, you have contacted the local government, which is the local chapters. You've also contacted did you talk to some of the local families and groups that are on this area that you're talking about?
Yeah, the best that we could identify them. We understand that the thing has been under a freeze for, 40 plus years. And having made several trips out there, the best that we can ascertain is that there's two occupied half of homes out there. And, we are willing to talk to anyone and everyone that has an interest. And we need everybody's support to make this work.
Yeah, well, here's basically what I'm getting at. You know, because of the nature and the complexity of the Navajo Nation government and how that we go through the different layers of approvals that need to take place. You know, as a businessman myself. You know, here's what really caught my eye on this particular issue was that I read a news article, and it had the president, Ben Shelley, and the quote was, "We want a partnership in this." And so my first thought was this, is that, and it's just my own personal philosophy, and that is that it doesn't matter what government it is. Government should not be in business. Government should be there to facilitate, to be able to allow, to be able to offer jobs, offer licenses and opportunity for people, and even like microloans, whatever it is, to be able to empower a Navajo entrepreneur. And rather than going in there and saying, I want to be a partner, there's other ways that the Navajo Nation can ascertain funds or revenues that they're looking for. Now, so that's the first thought. And so on the second level is this, is that as Navajo people, we have our elders. In fact, I was raised by traditional grandparents. And my grandparents actually sent me off the Navajo Nation because they didn't speak They didn't speak English. I was raised very, very traditionally. They told me, they said, go away, or I mean, we will send you away and you learn the ways of the white man. Come back home. And the famous word there is Nihitahndipdash. So I felt like that as a Navajo. I did that. And a lot of cases in this particular case, and it just hasn't happened just in the Escalade Western Navajo area. It's in all parts of the Navajo Nation. And so now what I'd like to explore as we're going through these layers of things that we need to really get to the bottom of is that, yes, it is very, very easy for anybody to come out and say, I don't agree with this, or to say no. But my question has been is that, do you guys understand how hard it is to start a business? And not only that, to start a business, do you know how difficult it is to go out there and to attract people that have the money to be able to make a job or a project happen? And so while we're doing this thing, yes, I am not belittling, and I'm not saying the Navajo culture and the Navajo traditional sites and sacred sites are not important. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is this, is that, yes, we know that that's there, but rather than just saying no, where do we meet in the middle? Now, you as an investor, looking in from the outside, and you basically obviously stepped up to the plate and said, yes, I'm willing to do this. And you, to your graciousness, which I do appreciate, you're saying that there's a lot of wonderful, beautiful people that you've met. But how do you see that we all meet in the middle? And how long are you willing to go in there despite all the negative no-no-nos, and how much further are you going to continue to push this project? Because in the long run, this is, you know, I mean, this project or any other project, Eastern Navajo or that project anywhere, they're going to be important. It's going to be important not only for this generation, but for the next generation and many more generations to come. So that's a big, huge question, Lamar. And what's your take on all of that?
Well, you know, initially this idea came about in 1997, and when Albert was president, I brought the concept to him, but we ran right into the Bennett freeze. And it wasn't until 4 years ago that, when it was lifted, that I approached Albert and I said, let's see if we can't get the government to jump on this. And after about 6 weeks of meeting with different government officials, we just were at dinner and we looked at each other and we said, if we don't do it, nobody else is going to do it. And so that began what will be a 4-year track in February. And it's been a slow go, and we're committed to grind it out, until we get an answer from the council. Hopefully it'll be yes, but if it's no, we'll understand.
What happens after that?
Well, if they say no, it's going to be up to them and the Navajo people on what they do. My own take on it is, I think Ben Shelley, when he talks about partnerships, I don't think he's talking about government managing things, because, you know, the conversations I've had with him is that he agrees with you, government doesn't do a very good job. But in all partnerships, not all partners are in control, or not all partners direct. Some partners bring different things to the table. You look at the Bank One Ballpark, Maricopa County brought two-thirds of the money to the table, and Jerry Colangelo brought a third of the money and the expertise. you know, in our situation, we're bringing 2/3 of the money, and the expertise in the Navajo Nation is bringing 1/3 of the money. Now, their 1/3 of the money will be used for other things like housing. You know, it's easy to say no or I quit, but that doesn't get you anywhere. And, you know, the one thing that, I appreciate that the Navajo people is their ability to endure. You can see it in the face of the elders in the chapter meetings. I mean, I love going to the chapter meetings I don't understand. Well, actually, I should back up. I do understand some Navajo, when the elders speak, they speak with such grace, and you can see that endurance and that hope in their face for their children. And I think I've related a couple of stories to you about encounters with some of the elders that, you know, I've drawn strength from. And will we get this thing done? I certainly hope so. It means so much to the Navajo people, and it can mean so much to the world community.
Yeah. Well, Amar, let me put you on hold. If you wouldn't mind, could you give us another 10 minutes after this particular segment? Is that okay with you?
Just kind of collect your thoughts. I'll try to stay awake.
Okay. I'll put you on hold, and I'll bring the other guest on. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, and we have added a new addition to the show, and I'm absolutely looking forward to this part, because I have always wanted to do kind of what I call a newsflash, and I'll come up with a new little segment for that, for an intro. But and I hope this gentleman stays with us for quite a long time as far as the duration of the show. But I'm very honored to have Mr. Bill Donovan from the Navajo Nation, who is a reporter, and I'm not sure if he wants me to mention the names of the newspaper that he's working for, but I will give him the next 5-10 minutes and whatever he wants to talk about, and it's called the Navajo Newsflash. Welcome, Mr. Bill Donovan.
How are you, Cal? I'm really not that good, Cal. I mean, I do work for the Navajo Times. I have been working for them since, off and on, since about 1976. And I've been covering elections since about 1970. So I've been here a long, long time. And people are interested in the tribal elections, but right now it's a little bit too early, because election season on the reservation usually doesn't begin until March or April of the year that the presidential race is held. But there's one aspect that's been going on lately that seems to be getting a lot of attention on the Navajo Reservation, and that's talk about the current president, Ben Shelley. In the last election, a lot of people, including me, didn't think Shelley had much of a chance against Linda Lovejoy, who seemed to have a better campaign staff and more charisma. Of course, we were all wrong, and Shelley managed to shock a lot of people election night with how well he did. 3 years later, the talk around the reservation is whether he has been able to keep that support. And many people are saying that Shelley will be going into this upcoming election with nowhere near the support he thinks he has. And if you ask Shelley or his people, like Deswood Tome, they don't understand this. They think that Shelley has the same amount of support he did 3 years ago. But I've talked to maybe 30 or 40 people who voted for Shelley in the last election, and they all, almost to a man, say they will not be voting for him again in 2014. And they say that the people they know will also not be voting for him. The interesting part about all this is that these people come from both Arizona and New Mexico. And it seems like a lot of his actions during the past 3 years have lost him a lot of his support, that he had back in 2010. The people in like New Mexico who supported him back in 2010 say he hasn't listened to them, he hasn't talked to them, and he hasn't done anything to help them in the last 3 years. And I've also heard a lot of people say that what's happened is that Shelley's people, his staff assistants, are shutting him out, and they're not telling him what is actually happening on the reservation or what's happening within the chapters. The general feeling is that when the election time comes along next August, the two people who will be running for the presidency would be Shelley and Joe Shirley. If this happens, Shelley, who is from New Mexico, really, really needs that support from the New Mexico chapters if he wants to win. And so far as I can tell, he's not going to be getting that support. Cal?
Yes. So this is a report in reference to the Navajo Nation presidential election that's coming up next
yes.
year, and I guess it's starting to go now. So in turn, it's all the of Ben Shelley. Who do you feel, who's out there?
Well, right, Joe Shirley is going to run. He's not saying it yet, but he's starting to get a campaign started, and he's really making the moves to do it. If he does, and he almost certainly will, I think he's going to be the front runner, although Shelley's people think he's going to be the front runner. So we're going to see Shelley and Joe Shirley run against each other, and I think, as it stands now, Joe Shirley would probably win.
So are you, what about any other names? I'm sure there's quite a few lists. I've heard about 23 or 24.
Yeah. You have a guy by the name of Kenneth Maryboy. Have you heard of him before?
I've heard of Kenneth, yes. He's from Utah.
He's from Utah. He's from your state. And that's not a good thing.
Yes, sir.
Believe it or not. Because, because Navajos, for some reason, have a tendency to vote for people from their own state. So Arizona Navajos would vote for someone from Arizona. New Mexico Navajos would vote for someone from New Mexico. This leaves the people in Utah out in the cold because there are not enough people in Utah to win an election. Only about 5% of the Navajo people live in Utah. And Kenneth Maryboy needs a lot more support than that.
Is Linda Lovejoy running?
She says she isn't. She's gotten very, very discouraged over the last two elections. And she feels that she doesn't have a chance right now to win because she's a woman. And this is really disheartening for her. And I think that she might be worried about Joe Shirley getting into the race because at that point she may have a hard time getting any kind of support either from New Mexico or Arizona. Another person who is thinking
any
about
other name?
Yeah, is Edison Juanica. You remember that name?
Oh, yes, sir. He's the with the elections.
Election office. So he may have some name recognition, but no one knows, I think, what his platform is or where he's going. So I think he's going to have a hard time getting the support he needs to actually win the election. Okay,
yeah,
that's
Bill, you and I have been in this.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, Bill, we've been in this political or in this scenery. He said, I can't remember what he said, over 30 years.
Over
I've been in business
years.
For 27 years. And, yeah, and I have been going back to the Navajo Nation, and I started my business during the Peter McDonald era, so I have been working in with the Navajo Nation government for quite some time, seeing all the chairmen and, you know, past and present. And what is your observation? I mean, we have seen, both you and I have seen many, many elections. My question to you is this, is that what's your feelings as you've seen on the Navajo Nation? What I've heard every cycle, the word change, change, change. Now, in the end, we always end up pretty much in the same or kind of in the same group. Way back in, 1980, in the 90s, we had the McDonald's Awe, and then and that, how far that's filtered, how far have we gone from that, and where are we going? And do you really feel like the Navajo Nation means that they really want to change?
But as you say, candidates always say it's time for a change, and they run on that. Oh, I want to tell you, the candidate I thought was the best as far as change was concerned was a businessman who ran for office back about 16 years ago by the name of Larry Manuelito. Do you remember him?
Oh, yes, I do.
He was head of Chesca Energy Company. And
yes,
I thought
sir.
He had a lot of good ideas. And I thought it would be, at that time, what the tribe needed was a business person coming in and looking at things from a business standpoint. Because every election, the business people say, we need changes so we can operate better on the reservation. But they never get those changes they need.
So do you think that, so what's your observation? I mean, with all these recent things that are happening now, I'm looking at Facebook and it's being flooded with the word change. Get them out. We need new blood.
Yeah, that's what it is. Remember, for such a long time, it was a Peter McDonald and Peterson Saw. That's all you heard about. And then we started getting a new crop of candidates come in. But for the most part, it's very difficult to do changes on the reservation because it's not the president of the tribe who controls what happens. It's the council. And the council does not want change.
Ah, quite interesting. Well, there you have it, everybody. That's Mr. Bill Donovan, and I appreciate that. And we'll have him on every week, and we'll give him different topics to explore. In fact, I think this Navajo Nation presidential race is going to be a very interesting topic to cover almost in every. On every show, because we're looking at the future. We're looking at, do we really need change and all these sorts of things? So, Bill, you're in with us, right?
Yes, I am. And what I'd like to talk about on the next show is something that I've written about many, many times, and that's the fact that the urban Navajo still has no power on the reservation when it comes to election time. Although they can now have more people off the reservation than there are on. And it's the people on the reservation that control the government.
Exactly. And I think that would be a wonderful topic. So, again, Bill, if anybody wants to get in touch with you, do you want to give out your information?
Yeah, you can get in touch with me at the Navajo Times at 928-871-1130 or through my email, IndianTrader2001@yahoo.com.
I love it, Indian Trader. All right, there you go. Thank you very much, Bill. Have a good day, and we'll talk to you next week, same time.
Okay, see you, Kyle.
Okay, you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, and I appreciate people listening in. You're welcome to call at any time, and I appreciate Bill Donovan for being with us, and that was a wonderful addition. And we're going to get back to our program, and that is Well, we have a gentleman, Lamar Whitmer, online with us, and he gave his introduction. So if you have any questions for him, and I appreciate him being here with us this evening. I know he said he was past his bedtime, but, you know, I guess he's going to have to take one day to sleep in now. So, so Lamar, I appreciate you being with us, and you kind of heard what Bill Donovan said, bringing up business. You know, and that's kind of the very central issue that we're talking about here, is that we have outside investors who are interested in developing and what you guys perceive as a help for the Navajo people, but you encounter various different sentiments locally, as well as all the way up to the Navajo Nation government. And so now, like right now, I just want to make sure that I totally have given you a fair chance to say that you feel like you have made every effort to go out and reach out to the local people, to the areas that you are trying to develop, which is the Escalade project, which is in the confluence by Page and of that area. Lamar.
Well, I don't know if it would be fair to characterize it as every effort, but we've made efforts, you know, and we'll continue to, you know, we continue to be open to talk to people. You know, I've talked to various groups that are in opposition, and, you know, it's better to talk than not. And so...
And, but as far as the local government, you feel like that you've also have reached out and feel like that the local chapters in the Tuba City area feel like they are on board or not on board where they stand at?
Well, you know, the previous president, chapter president, and the current chapter president, and all the chapter officers we've had dialogues with and continue to have dialogues with, I know they're frustrated that the Window Rock folks haven't come out to talk to the chapter, but you know, there's nothing we can do about that. You know, if called to come out, we'll come out. I'm always open to talk to people.
Okay, well, that's good to know, because you know. It's not just this particular situation. I think that I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I think that somewhere along this road that that we're all traveling on in terms of we as a nation, the people, you know, we've got to be able to understand the business dynamics. I mean, that's not a criticism. It's a reality. I mean, I've seen it for 27 years, and that is that, you know, I'm not saying I have better knowledge. I'm saying that, ladies and gentlemen, Ashkode, please, everybody, we need to come to the table and try to understand the dynamics of what it takes to put a business venture together. It's not just in one particular area. It's everywhere across the Navajo Nation. You know, so the, and also just for clarification, you said that it's not especially a partnership agreement. So if it's not a partnership, well, I'm not sure if I can ask this question, but what would the relationship in terms of the Navajo Nation government be?
Well, they're going to contribute the money for the offsites. We're going to title the property over to the hospitality enterprise, and they'll participate in the design, and then we'll operate it. And you know, and that's the nexus of the deal. You know, one thing I ought to tell you is that you know, while it takes takes a little bit longer on the Navajo reservation to do projects like this. But, you know, I have to tell you, in California, the permitting process it tends to be from anywhere from 3 to 6 years for development projects. And so, you know, it's not as easy as going, to a rural county and getting your stuff stamped in a couple of weeks. It's, you know, I don't think the Navajo people should be feel bad about things taking a little longer. It's just the way it is. And, and we knew that going into this thing. You know,
so you're willing to endure till the end, so to speak.
Well, as long as we can. I don't know what the end looks like, but we're a pretty hardy group, and we're kind of hard to kill off.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that like I was saying also that. If I, as a Navajo person, if I want to start a project and I want to do it on the Ute Indian Reservation, one of the things that I feel—I mean, this is why I'm somewhat perplexed, and I'm not siding with either side or say that so and so is wrong or anything like that. I think it's just a misunderstanding about the dynamics of business. And I think that, you know, even in every type of little minor discussion or thought, you know, I typically sign or have a contract called a confidentiality agreement that, hey, here's an idea. I sit down with somebody, I have them sign it. And so that's how we start. I particularly don't want anybody to steal my ideas, you know, because it is what it is. And the same thing goes for if a Navajo person comes up with a new design on a particular jewelry. Yeah, certainly, you know, they want to be the first one out there to, you know, to sell it. I mean, that's the nature of the business. And so, you know, and I think that. Do you feel like that some of these, I mean, I really want to make sure that we all understand and that what your side, because I want to hear your side to be able to say, you know, you feel like that you have reached out. Now, while reaching out, you know, yes, do we cover all grounds? Yes, we all think that. However, in the essence of this particular project and now, I just want to make sure that you feel like that you've given it your all.
Well, it's like I said, you know, we've done our best. You know, we can always do better. We're always willing to talk to people. You know, if somebody wants to talk to us and have a dialogue, a respectful dialogue back and forth and try to reach a better understanding, we're always available for that. But there comes a point where you do have to move. You know, we feel that in this endeavor, we've lost 2 years. And when I look at 2 years, I look at 2 years of lost payroll, 2 years of no jobs. And you know, that's what weighs on my heart. So you have to balance, opportunity lost and civil dialogue. And we're, like I say, we're available to talk to anybody. Would relish the opportunity to understand everybody's position. I think we've got a pretty good handle on it. But you can always...
Where do we get in touch with you?
Probably the office number is the best place, 480-945-4879. And...
Okay.
Be patient. We're not always in the office, but we will return your calls.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. So, in closing, we only have about 5 minutes left in the show, and I appreciate it. You know, I'm sure glad this 15 minutes turned into an hour show, Lamar. I appreciate it. And
that's
where do we go from here?
Well, I guess you kept me on an hour because I've been to enough chapter meetings that I've learned how to like to talk. Well, where do we go from here? We, you know, our next stop is the council, and as the representatives of the Navajo people, you know, they need to make some decisions. We think it's a pretty good deal. We think we make a pretty good case, and you know, we really look forward to being in front of them, and then. Once we're past that, it's a matter of assembling the $150 million, which isn't going to be an easy thing to do, but, you know, we're looking forward to it. You know, we have many investors that are interested, but with that interest comes concerns. You know, with what's happened over on the Wallapai Reservation, they're very concerned about. Well, I hate to use the term, but it's been, you know, but a few of them have expressed to me they don't want to get wallopied. And when you're dealing in Indian country, it's much harder. And it really is an education process to get investors in. My first experience was with the Yavapai Prescott Sheridan Resort. And I can tell you my my superiors in New York were not happy with the fact that I was spending 6 months on a project that they wouldn't have spent more than 6 days on. But, you know, there again, the chairperson at the time, Pat McGee, I had met with, and she asked me to help her people. And it was a very difficult project, but we got it done. And I hope to have the same results to escalate. You know, the easy stuff, anyone can do.
Well, you know, when it's it's a lot of work. And, you know, just so that I, you know, just have a record clear as well, is that, you know, I've had people and from that area while I'm talking about this and some of the questions that I've been posing to basically have said about me that am I working and for the Escalate project, or am I getting paid by Lamar Whitmer? I am saying, you know what? There is no connection. All I'm trying to do is bring these business ideology to the forefront. And so even as far as those types of suspicion, which is usually typically always looming around about this thing, but I think, you know, wherever you go, from here, I think that, the idea that you're interested, I think, is very, that's very admirable. And I encourage the Navajo people, you gave your telephone number out. You're on air this evening to be able to share your information. And and it's just not a courtesy call just for you. It's the door's open to everybody. In fact, I had the Forgotten People and also the Save the Confluence people. And the Save the Confluence people basically backed out on the second go-round. I really wanted to get some input. But the bottom line is this, is that as Navajo people and also investors and people from the outside, I think that it's good to have dialogue. to be able to have everybody bring their ideology to the table, no matter whether we agree with it. Eventually, we might walk away from a situation where we all agree to disagree. And I just one very quick thought, Lamar. I would like to ask you what your parting word would be to the people in Western Navajo. What do you want them to understand?
I would like them to understand what this means to them and to the world, to be able to share something of beauty and harmony, and something as spectacular as the Green Canyon, the awe-inspiring. I think it would, it's beneficial to both the Navajo people and the world. You know, we owe this to our kids and our grandkids.
One other question. So, how do we resolve this? That this sacred site. Is there a place that we can get to?
We're cognizant of the sacred sites. We've been involved with the historic preservation. We've talked to the local medicine man. And, we're going to be respectful. They're not going to be disturbed. They'll be protected. They'll be respected. That's all I can say. We think it's compatible.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Lamar Whitmore, I appreciate you being on air with us this evening, and I will let you go, and I might be in touch with you again so we can continue this dialogue to kind of get some updates here and there, and I hope that we all come to some sort of a win-win solution. So, and have a very wonderful holidays. I wish you and your family well, and thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate this opportunity that we have had to spend this evening with one another. For those that are still interested, we will continue on to 10:30. I just asked for a little bit more time. So, in reference to, just want to throw this out there to everybody. I am open. And I believe the Navajo Nation, we have got to continue to find avenues where we can actually empower our people. I think we have there is a possibility. It's in our blood. We've done that for thousands of years without a government taking care of us. I will always stand by that. So having said that, while we're doing this thing, I guess some of the things that we ought to ask ourselves as Navajo people is that, and it's just not just Western Navajo, it's all the way across the board, and that is that while we're addressing these issues where we have concerns, they are legitimate concerns, they're viable concerns, they're sacred concerns, there are people shed tears over these concerns, and we understand that, but I guess we have got to be able to try to make an effort of where do we bring this modern-day technology, what we call business, and the traditional aspect of the Navajo Nation. Where do we meet in the middle? Where is it that we feel like that it's going to be a happy medium? Or are we just going to say no and we won't have a development? We won't have where we're going to be 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. And I guess these are the things that we need to explore. And, I had hoped that I would bring some of the thoughts what's behind the mind of an investor. And the investor, That's tough. Whoever brings this person in, and an investor, it's a very difficult thing to do. I'm not sure who brought this person in, this my friend or your friend, our friend, Lamar Whitmer, to say, hey, you know what, invest in on this project. So as we move forward, I believe that we ought to be very careful as to how we say our no's, and that is N-O apostrophe S. That's not no. It's me kitchen tota. Koto tota di ninigishi to hito. Ako toto tata tata o liego toto tata hoto ninigishi to. Pasti ako jan ka atipin ni na hoto ni ka asinan liego bata ilni. Kaino sika to bati no. Ako e ada nara hito ka tita nara hito ka ni ka anto siya. Koto liego to e non-nishin-lini wato e nawal-yeni tra e ta non-nish-business e wato e beke chitlado le khashin-zago akho bini nache-chiyado le tra e ta ta wato batal tra e ta anle ta khada al-shinda ni tinda aada hushte wato e li khashtuido e liya e aada ni yen tan sin sino ada hoto for ji so tish ji ni shi da hoto ako I haven't seen that change. I maybe it has, I don't know, but as far as my home here off the Navajo Nation she hoto sha sino do ji yes ki close so ki has li e aja hoto hoto tish no e aja yana na shi ako so as we're going down this avenue, you know, we have a very complex thing. In fact, I'm very impressed with the Navajo people. I look at some of the, when we were involved with the Navajo Chamber of Commerce, how many Navajos had come and they're actually in business. That was a wonderful thing. So this is kind of a little thoughts and process that I'm bringing out into the fold, so to speak, as we're talking about these. And I will have other guests from other projects and see where they're at and what they're doing and so forth and so forth. And of course, Bill Donovan, I appreciate that he's here, that he called in. And I have given him that time and that amount of time because he's brought together commentaries about Navajo politics on the Navajo Times. And so his opinion isn't necessarily the opinion of this particular show, Politics of the Navajo Nation. So, you know, please understand that. So I just want to throw that preference in there. And we have a caller online, and it's like I think it's past everybody's bedtime. So, I believe I know who this is. So, yate.
is this me you're talking to?
Yeah. Yes. How?
Okay.
Yate.
Good evening. Yate. My name is Sharon Jackson, and I'm from Church Rock, New Mexico. And I just had a couple of questions and insights into your discussion about economic development, because I do know that you're in business, that you do run your own business. What about the issue of academia? Does it apply on the most basic level? Like, for instance, you have all these professors that are talking about the reason why there's not nation building going on, and there's all these theories that are out there in the ether talking about why some tribes are very well off economically versus other tribes that are just in abysmal poverty. Do you think there's any relevance, you know, at the local level, at grandma and grandpa's level? Because I'm in that same boat, you know. I have 3 degrees, and I can't get into Navajo Nation politics or Navajo Nation anything. I keep getting these letters where, you know, I'm not qualified, but I have an undergraduate in political science and American Indian Studies and my master's in public administration. And, you know, I have that same go home, help the people kind of thing, but there's just doors just seem to be closed, and I'm wondering, you know, is there a different way that we can look at this? Can we incorporate academia into it? Can we do a different kind of paradigm where we work with the tribes, the men, et cetera, et cetera?
Wow. I'm sorry, what was your name now?
Sharon Jackson.
Sharon Jackson, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate you calling in. You know what? Your questions is exactly what I've always wanted to discuss with somebody who is wanting to get into business or looking at the economics. So I welcome your question. Now, just to kind of give some background information about you, where are you calling from?
I am calling from Church Rock.
You live in Church Rock?
Yep, I'm on a reservation.
Yeah.
I went to the U of A for my undergrad, and I just finished my master's at University of Mexico. And, you know, I really want to help out, but, you know, there's the language gap, there's the generation gap, and I'm not too proficient with Navajo, but that doesn't mean that I'm not as, you know, devoted to helping people as other folks that may not be as fluent in the language as me. You know, I know that's an issue.
So do you mind if I ask what age bracket that you are?
Yep, I'm in my 30s.
Okay, so you're in your 30s, and you have a degree, and are you currently employed right now?
No. In fact, I've applied at least 20 times to the tribe, and I'm not even kidding. And I've just received rejection letter after rejection letter. So now I'm looking off reservation because, I mean, I cannot get my foot in the door. I don't know who to talk to, who to network with, or, you know, who I can talk to. I talked to my council delegate at one time, and he was supposed to give me an interview, but he never really gave me a chance. He never really interviewed me, and he, you know, picked someone, I think, based on the fact that he was fluent in Navajo, and I'm not. But, you know, I wasn't even given a chance, so I was really upset about that.
Yeah.
So how are we supposed to come home and help if no one's going to give us a chance?
Yeah. Well, you know, that sentiment or that question has been looming very heavily. You know, I mean, I've had a lot of people even on Facebook who were actually talking about, hey, you know what are we going to do? And I think that what was quite interesting, if you remember what I asked Bill Donovan earlier, was that I basically asked him, I said, you know what, when people talk about change, what do we really mean by change? And I am quite aware of that. I'm quite aware of that. You know, here's the Navajo Nation, okay? We have a government. We're a nation within a nation. And so we have several different, very complex sets of issues. But I think question goes, and I'll get to my point in terms of what you said about business. But I think it's fair to explore this idea that the Navajo people, you know, learn and come back and help us. And at what point are we really going to give a chance? And so that's why I asked Bill Donovan. I said, do you really think that people mean when they say we need change? And so the feeling that I'm getting from you is that, well, I'm here to help, but you're getting rejection after rejection after rejection. And so now it sounds to me like what you're exploring is the possibility that, well, if I can't do it within the government, maybe I can do it for myself. Is that what you're basically looking at right now?
Well, I figure because I lack a lot of experience, I probably have to go off reservation and take my talents elsewhere, you know? And I guess what I'm more interested in is how do we transfer what we learn in academia to everyday life, you know? You hear about all these theories like I was talking about, like I learned at U of A about why nations, Native nations aren't progressing like they should, and what type of prescriptions, like economically or what other way that we could try and incorporate that into our council delegates. I mean, take it from academia and apply it to, like, everyday life. But if there's no bond there, if there's no outlet there, then it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Absolutely right on the button. And I'll give it to you in one sentence. And that's the way that our government is set up by Washington, how that our treaty was set up. And it's not just the Navajo people. The whole system has been set up so that we will forfeit our self-reliance and our self-sufficiency so that we rely on the federal government for all handouts. Of course, nobody saw into the future up to this point to say, okay, yes, back then, I mean, there was a very small number of Navajo in comparison to what we have now, 350,000 or plus. And right now, the responsibility is huge, huge. And so to take these knowledge, and again, this setup right here, the way we have it on the Navajo Nation, is that it's the same issue as what Mexico is facing. The economy is very bad. Why do you think the Mexican people were coming across the board, were coming across over here because they found better jobs and better, you know, the same thing is happening, has happened on every Indian reservation. The only place they can go is off reservation, and the ones that are staying on the Navajo Nation, the ones that have the job, you know, it's wonderful that they're there, but at what point do we grow? But I think economically speaking, I really feel that the Navajo people has got to engage themselves in this discussion. When you really talk about economic development, and that is business. Business, 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 which goes back to the fundamental teaching, and that is that what do we really mean? I've had people sit here and call me up and, or, you know, have a huge discussion on Facebook on this thing saying capitalism is bad and, you know, making money is bad. But you know what? The today, the here and now, the Navajo people, we gauge our, quote, wealth on money. Well, before the government came in, what do they gauge their wealth on? Property and livestock ownership. So back then, the dollars were, and, you know, I mean, just to put it in the basic lingo, is that the dollar was, or the animal represented dollars and wealth and so forth. But now, you know, you fast forward to today, today it's the dollars. Now, so the system, boy, I tell you, we need to start, and this is what I've said in the Navajo Chamber of Commerce, we need to start way with the younger generation, put in, talk about business. How do we make this thing happen? The Navajo people, we've been doing business for a long, long time. That's in our blood. We know how to do it. But, well, these days, the first train of thought that happens at a chapter meeting is that kudosha, or, you know, and it's not a criticism. It's just the way that I've seen it observed. Is that I've had even elected leaders during their campaign. Well, you know, the reality is this, that government can't really, really, really provide the answers to all means. So the question is that what you just posed is that at what point do we break this cycle? I think that we got to begin thinking. And to take people like you and the rest and to begin to incorporate your ideology and the philosophy. Because right now we have this inside us and them. If you go off reservation, you're an outsider now. Apparently you felt like that you were better than us. Now you come back home and now you want to, you know. So there's so many different cycles that we need to break. But the first thing is that we have got to realize that the way that the system is set up, and for me, I only speak for me, Cal Nez, and that is to say, you know what? I don't need a government to give me handouts for me to feel like I am worth or have a means to life's basic sustenance. You know, I believe that my abilities, whatever that my grandmother gave to me, were very traditional. The things that I'm doing today is traditional. So now I would be very interested, Sharon, do you have any desire to start a business?
Well, I thought about maybe, you know, starting my own lobbying firm. And I just want to go back to the issue that you talked about, like, you know, how the federal government has established federal Indian nations through policies and such. I guess the point that I would bring up is that, you know, like, through academic readings that I've become acquainted with, they say that the majority of the reason why a lot of tribal governments fail is because there's no legitimacy in the eyes of the people. The people don't see the government as legitimate, therefore the government doesn't have any respect. And I would say that's true in the case of the Navajo Nation. The other thing that I would also bring up is that we're not...
You don't think that it's true? Is that what you said?
No. I agree with that assessment because a lot of Navajos don't view our Navajo Nation government as legitimate or powerful. And in fact, you know, there's always people on Facebook that are making fun of the council delegates and so forth. The legitimacy is really low. Like, the leaders are made fun of. They're not respected. Now, if we were able to, like, one of the paradigm shifts that I think we could make is that we could actually vote to have a referendum, to have a constitution. That way, I think, you know, we as the voters, we could, you know, become incorporated in that process and take ownership of that constitution, because as of now, we don't have one. And so we're not, like, we don't feel connected to the government, you know. And the other theory that Kyle still read, most of them are from Harvard professors, is that, you know, another reason why tribal governments fail is because they've moved away from the traditional form of governance and pretty much, like, copied and pasted off the way the United States government, a foreign government, is run. So if you were able to go back to a more traditional form of governance, then the legitimacy of the government would be enhanced. Is there a way that we could incorporate that into a constitution where it's more representative of the people, you know? I mean,
yeah,
can we
is
put
that,
those ideas
into
the council delegates, into our council delegates, and, you know, say, like, hey, we need to take a chance. We need to get away from the status quo.
Yeah. You know, one of the things very interesting to me is that the Navajo Constitution has been discussed many, many, many times in the 27 years that I've been in business and then going back to the Navajo Nation. But I suppose, you know, that's one of the avenues. But I think right now, for those people who don't understand really, there's one that is kind of like what some people have called the Navajo Nation Law, or they call the Navajo the Net Fundamental Laws, as
mm-hmm.
some people consider that to be the Navajo Constitution. But my question would be is that if we go to back to the traditional way of philosophy, let's say we just throw out the three-branch government and say we're going to start fresh, and, you know, do you think that's going to resolve the issue about business?
I don't really know, but it's definitely worth a shot because the way the system is set up now, you know, every day I read in the Independent about how these council delegates have been embezzling hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I'm just like thinking, when was the last time that we had a true leader that had integrity that said we're not going to steal from the people? And there's no, you know, repercussions. There's just a slap on the hand. It's just, don't do it, pay it back. They probably never pay it back. There's, none of them go to jail. And they continue to, you know, steal from the people. So,
yeah.
It's really complicated.
So do you think that taking of, I mean, speaking of, this is one of the topics I wanted to cover also, was that, you know, by going back to the traditional way of thinking, would that alleviate what's happened recently, do you think?
Well, my understanding is that the traditional form of governance, which was more like a natural community where people that were leaders in the community came together and they did kind of like a direct democracy. It wasn't much of a representative, more of a direct democracy. And they had war leaders and peace leaders. In peacetime, peace leaders led, and in wartime, war leaders led. And whoever was the most charismatic and who was able to convince the people, they were the right leader for that time. What they would do is they would make their case, and then whoever the people agreed with, they would line up in a line, and whoever had the most people on their side would become that leader. If we had people of integrity speaking for the community, wouldn't we be able to enhance legitimacy and the social capital of the Navajo Nation government where people are like, yeah, man, those people in those offices, they are working for me. What can I do to help out, you know? As of right now, everybody's like, goodness, everybody in there, they're a bunch of frauds and a bunch of, you know, and people without integrity, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, Sharon, what I'm going to do is this. I would like to have you call back in next week, okay? Mm-hmm. We'll only have about 3 minutes. And I want to continue this discussion, and I hope that more and more people off the reservation as well as within the reservation who feel exactly the same way, because it is a legitimate concern. It's something that we need to discuss. Can I get you to do that next week?
Sure. I've got time.
Yeah.
No,
awesome.
Okay.
So hold that thought because I need to get to another topic. Just I want to do this recording before I play this recording. But I will talk to you next week, Sharon. Thanks for calling in.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye. Okay. Just in closing, with a few minutes left to go, I would like to have you guys listen to this.
Jacob, I'm the Executive Vice President here at Red Cross Indians Corp. Been here for 29 years. My name is Robert Braveheart. Jacob, I'm the Executive Vice President here at Red Cross Indians Corp. Been here for...
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And, what's your take on the reference by the Washington Redskins and their official letter from Dan Snyder, which is the owner?
Not I just want to be